This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hour number two, Sharp Money. Jared Smith in for Patrick today. Amal Shaw here as well. And joining us now from BamaOnline.com, senior analyst, joined by Travis Ryer. And we talked a little bit, Travis, about the college football news today regarding Jim Harbaugh, but obviously Alabama has a completely different situation. It's unique. And we've had, I was going through the list of quarterback names over the last 5 years or so, starting with Jalen Hurts, then Tua, then Mac Jones, and Bryce Young. I mean, these are all guys playing, starting MVP-level type quarterbacks, perhaps, in the NFL. Now we have a question mark next to the starting quarterback situation in Tuscaloosa for the first time maybe in almost a decade. And it's a kid by the name of Jalen Milroe, who, by the way, is about 60-1 right now to win the Heisman. Did start one game last year for the injured Bryce Young. But those are big shoes to fill, right, Travis? Where does Jalen Milroe slot into the Alabama quarterback battle heading into camp?
Well, he's certainly one of those three guys at this point. It's almost impossible to maybe pick a favorite between Milroe and Tyler Simpson and Tyler Buckner coming in from Notre Dame. So it's a three-horse race, and it's going to be fascinating to watch Nick Saban and new offensive coordinator Tommy Rees try to, you know, get that thing narrowed down to at least two guys as quickly as they can. They'll have a couple of fall camp scrimmages, and then before you know it, it'll be time for Middle Tennessee with Texas on deck. So certainly some urgency there. I think when you look at all three candidates, there's some things that you can point to as favoring that potential candidate. I think for Milroe, in an offense that's run heavy, that you anticipate being more run heavy, or at least the first priority being the run game more so than it's been the last couple of years, he can facilitate that, and he can also contribute to that with his skill set. And then you look at Ty Simpson, he's kind of a in-between guy. He can run it, but he's probably the more polished of the two or three passers. I'd say Buckner's up there too, and the little bit I've seen of him. And, you know, Buckner showed you in Notre Dame's Gator Bowl win over South Carolina, he can do it with his legs too. So I think there's going to be a mix that's required, and ultimately I think ball security, taking care of the football, turnovers, and keeping those to a minimum is going to go a long way in determining the winner.
Travis, how do you like this rotation of the wide receiver position? Tremaine Burton, obviously the Georgia transfer from last year, and then Ja'Cory Brooks, and then potentially Kobe Prentice, Isaiah Bond, and Emmanuel Henderson. Who are some of the guys that you'd think could emerge for this team? Because we're so used to Bama having just absolute dudes at the receiver position.
Yeah, just in terms of depth of talent, you like it a lot. You know, last season, you know, Burton and Brooks did some good things. They kind of combine to give you a wide receiver, a number one wide receiver. They didn't individually give you the kind of production that maybe you had seen in previous seasons from Devontae Smith, Jameson Williams, some of those guys. But coming back is a little different feel to it this time around, because a year ago, even with the departures of Mechie and Williams from the previous season, you kind of figured that Bryce would lift the play of the wide receivers and really the skill talent around him in general. And so this time around, you're looking at guys like Burton and Brooks and Malik Benson coming in from the junior college ranks, a couple of freshmen that you played a year ago, and Isaiah Bond, Kobe Prentice. You're thinking, you know, these guys might be able to lift the quarterback play. You haven't really needed that over the last 4 or 5 years, but more so than certainly the last couple of years, I think it's going to be on these veteran wide receivers to help the quarterback out.
Joined by Travis Ryer, senior analyst over at BamaOnline.com. You can follow him on Twitter at Travis Ryer. And it's when I handicap college football teams, a red flag for me is when the team is replacing both the offensive and defensive coordinator, their early success sometimes can be a little bit choppy. That's what we see on the defensive side as well. We talk about the offensive side of the ball, new coordinator this year, new quarterback this year. On the defensive side of the ball, Kevin Steele, who had a ton of success at Auburn, has a big task in front of him, replacing some really talented players, especially up front. When we think about Alabama, recently it's been more offense, but at their core, at their guts, a great defensive team. What should we expect from the Crimson Tide on the defensive side of the ball this year with a new coordinator?
Yeah, the good thing with Kevin is there's certainly a familiarity there between himself and Nick, having worked together in a couple of previous stints at Alabama. So I think it's a stabilizing hire. I know that sounds kind of crazy when you consider that, you know, you're replacing a guy that spent the last 4 or 5 years at the helm of that Alabama defense of Pete Golding. But again, as we know, Kevin Steele, a guy that's been around the block, he's been around the block with Nick. So I think that's a good thing. But they do have to replace a ton of production, really, at every level of the defense. So they've got talent, as you might expect. They continue to recruit at a very high level. But up front, a second-year player like Jaheim Otis right there in the middle of that defensive line is going to be counted on heavily. I think getting Justin Aboigbe back healthy for a fifth year at the end position is going to be very important. And they've got some edge guys that you know a lot about. Dallas Turner, Chris Braswell, Will Anderson moving on, but still feel good about some of those guys at the edge spots, inside linebacker and safety, right up the middle of that defense. They're counting on Caleb Downs, a true freshman at safety, a fantastic young player who I think you're going to hear some comparisons to Minka Fitzpatrick probably before it's all said and done. Inside linebacker, you lose a lot of experience there. So Deontay Lawson's a guy that played a lot last season. I think they're going to ask him to take on more of the load. And, you know, who is that play caller at inside linebacker? They brought in Trez Marshall, a transfer from Georgia. Justin Jefferson, a promising junior college prospect, is now in that mix. So corner you like with what you got there, because Kool-Aid McKinstry, an All-American. Tarion Arnold played a good bit last season, and they really like a young nickelback that they've got in Earl Little Jr., whose father, it may sound familiar, was a really good defensive back for Miami back in the day. So, you know, there are pieces, as you, again, would have expected Alabama, but as far as documented game production, absolutely a lot to replace.
Travis, you took my next question. I was going to ask you about Dallas Turner and Caleb Downs. Well, let's go to the other side of the ball then. Jace McClellan, potentially the starting running back there. You look at the room, Justice Haynes, a big-time freshman coming in there, Roydell Williams as well. Tell me a little bit about how you see the starter or who would be, and then how the depth lines up at the tailback position, which has always been a key cog in the Bama offense.
It has been key, and I think it's going to be even more key because I don't think they're going to be as quarterback-centric as they've been with Bryce Young, certainly the last couple of years, or even Mack before that, Tua. So they're going to lean on that depth at running back. And Jace is a guy that has a lot of experience. He's had a couple of injuries. So can he stay healthy over the course of 13, 14, 15 games? That's important, but that depth certainly gives them some security there with Justice Haynes coming in as an outstanding young freshman back. And you said Roydell Williams, don't forget about this guy. He can bring some thump, and he's, I think, a good fit for what Tommy Reese wants to do. More direct runs, I think, with Tommy Reese in this offense and letting this offensive line really get after people on early downs especially. So Roydell is kind of a one-cut runner. I think that fits him well. And you know, Jam Miller's a guy that's going into his second year. Really, really good back, promising back as well. Running style similar to Roydell's, probably more of a burst and an ability to bounce and get to the corner. So he's going to be in that mix. And, you know, they brought in another five-star over the summer in Richard Young, who, along with Justice Haynes, gave him a heck of a 1-2 punch in this most recent recruiting class.
Travis, what's the offensive line shaping out to be like this year? Bama, even with Bryce Young, who was probably maybe one of the smartest players in the history of college football last year, they were still outside the top 30 in sacks per game. Offensive line, a little leaky. Bryce, of course, got hurt at one point. Do we think it's going to be a little more secure up front for whoever's under center for the Tide this year?
Yeah, I think they're counting on that area being the identity for their offense, if not their football team in general. Kind of retro Bama a little bit. Obviously, the quarterback's still going to have to make some plays. You know, it's an era of football right now where you can't just hide a quarterback or the passing game. But first and foremost, absolutely. You know, with a guy like J.C. Latham back at tackle, Seth McLaughlin at center, Tyler Booker in there at guard, Darian Dalcourt, a veteran player that's back, looks like he's going to be more of an option at guard after starting each of the last two seasons with the ones at center. So they've got a nice mix of talent and some guys that have played a lot. So I think for sure that offensive line, they're counting on it being an absolute strength for, again, not just the offense, but for the team in general.
Travis, outside of the LSU and the Texas games, which are both in Tuscaloosa, what other game concerns you as a Bama fan or backer this year?
You know, I think the good news for Alabama is in September, Texas is in Tuscaloosa. In October, Tennessee is in Tuscaloosa. Mm. In November, LSU is in Tuscaloosa. So I believe people look at Alabama's schedule and think, wow, this sets up perfectly for them. And when you talk about those three specific games, absolutely. I think they really needed to have Texas in Tuscaloosa this time around because of the transition they're going to be going through. But you know, I think there's some games on the road, a game like Texas A&M in early October. You know, if A&M actually lives up to it this time around, that will be a tough, tough matchup for Alabama. So I would say those three or four games are what you're going to look at first and foremost.
Travis Ryer, senior analyst for BamaOnline.com. Follow him on Twitter at Travis Ryer. We appreciate the time, pal.
Hey, thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Yeah, Roll Tide. I do think A&M might be a little better than people think, and that could be an early fun home dog spot for the Aggies.
Well, they've historically, it seems like in many situations, they've played them tough. Last year was a very, very tight game, so we'll see what Jimbo's got on the line there. I'll tell you one thing, though. Jimbo doesn't get out of the block strong. He might not even be there for that game.
Yeah, tough times for Coach Fisher. Sharp Money continues next.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
We all know about the speed of sound, but have you ever thought about the sounds of speeding? Drive too fast, you could hear the sound of your vehicle crashing because one way or another, speeding catches up with you. Paid for by NHTSA. This is Sharp Money. Jared Smith in for Patrick today. Amal Shaw flanked over here. We're going to have Ryan Reynolds, 33rd team associate director of fantasy and betting, does a fantastic job covering the NFL in our next segment. So let's grease the wheels a little bit of the NFL roundtable, the circus that is the news cycle of the NFL spinning very fast. It felt like this was the first week when I picked up my phone on Monday morning, and I'm usually up at around 6, 7 a.m. Pacific time. That's 9, 10 a.m. Eastern time. Usually the news train is pretty hyped by then. And yesterday I already had multiple messages, or I guess tweets or X's as they're called now, on my screen. One of them about Nyheim Hines. Terrible accident that took place on a jet ski. Buffalo Bills just lost one of their better offensive players for the season. CJ Gardner-Johnson, very talented and free agent safety for the Detroit Lions, who went down with a non-contact injury in practice. Thankfully, not serious as of now. And then, of course, Tom Brady's dating life was also hot and heavy on my feed yesterday. But while it does seem like now, as the calendar about to turn to August, the NFL, it just beats you over the head every day. All 32 teams are in camp. I expect every day we are going to get some kind of news in some capacity about what's shaping the league.
Well, there's no question about it. I mean, you get to this point in July, and remember, a week from Thursday is the Hall of Fame game.
Yeah, and NFL games next week.
Exactly. So we're there right now. It's on its way, and it should be a lot of fun. Very intriguing when you look at everything. The one thing you do want to pay attention to right now are injuries that may take place in training camp. We see Kadarius Toney undergoing surgery for the Kansas City Chiefs. Shouldn't be out too long, but just to clean up cartilage there on a knee. There's always going to be those things. You mentioned the Nyheim Hines injury, so just something to pay attention to. Unfortunately, there will probably be a team or two that loses a key piece in training camp, but hopefully that doesn't happen.
Nyheim Hines, guys.
Yeah.
He got hurt on a jet ski.
Yeah. This is a ridiculous story.
Like, here's the.
I feel awful for him. I don't know. I don't know if it was his fault or not.
I don't want to be this guy, but you're putting your livelihood on the line when you do these things. I know it was an accident. It wasn't his fault, but you're putting like, surgeons can't do things where they could break their hands. Do you know what I mean? They have to be wary of situations. Like, they probably can't go skiing and rollerblading and things of that nature. Like, when your livelihood is on the line, I used to get in this argument all the time when I covered NASCAR, because Denny Hamlin tore his ACL playing pickup basketball.
How about Aaron Boone?
Yeah.
And that's then, the first one that comes to mind when he tore his ACL playing pickup basketball the day after, the week after the Yankees got bounced from the playoffs.
Who else am I missing? Tony Stewart broke his back racing some other form of car racing instead of stock cars at the time. I just think when your livelihood is attached to your health, you can't be making decisions and putting yourself in these situations.
I completely agree with you. Now, people will push back and say, well, they got to live. I get that. However, I would actually...
There's plenty of other ways to live as a millionaire.
No, I don't disagree with you. And, you know, to me, you mentioned the surgeon. I can make the argument for a surgeon that they should be able to do things just because you have a 40-year career. But as an athlete, your window is so finite.
I'm just saying surgeons have to like look at situations like, my hands are how I make money.
I think there's a balance.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? I think jet skis may be approaching the line. Maybe you're not going over it, but you're kind of in the gray area of,
Here's my thing. For me, everything comes down to risk versus reward, just in general in life. And so why would you put yourself in that position? And, you know, I think Dustin's absolutely right. That in these types of things, if you're Nyheim Hines, who's not a guy that's, you know, Christian McCaffrey, not a Deebo Samuel, a guy
he's going to get Wally pipped really fast.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah, I think it's not something that I think will move the market considerably. I haven't noticed considerable market movement against the Bills because of this injury. But what this injury does, two things. First of all, it maybe makes Dalvin Cook's number a little more attractive for Buffalo to take on. But it also gives you the patience necessary to bet the NFL futures market. I was very bearish on Buffalo heading into this season. I thought maybe it was going to be one of those years where they didn't have the high upside season that they were perhaps potential with Josh Allen at quarterback for. And then you throw this injury in the mix, and I'm not saying it's going to have a big impact on their win-loss record at all, but sometimes the bad vibes are just in your corner. Injury luck is a thing, and if this is any indication of how the Bills' injury luck is going to be this year, well, then maybe we should be selling on Buffalo a little earlier than I had hoped.
Yeah, you're absolutely right on that, potentially. By the way, Nyheim Hines in a three-year, $18 million contract, so at least he got paid in terms of financially. Wow. But I want to get back to the point you made about the futures market. Unless you like a long shot, let's say a team that's 25-1 or better, having looked at what the preseason and regular season odds are compared to the postseason, I actually wouldn't bet almost any of these teams, especially any team that you would consider to be in the top 15, top 16.
Yeah.
Unless it's someone like Seattle last year who made a push, I would look at teams that are long shots right now. Otherwise, it's just not worth it. When you get to the postseason, Kansas City, I don't know, what are they right now, Dustin? 5-1, 6-1 to win the Super Bowl?
6-1.
Okay, so when you get to the postseason, they might be 3-1. And yes, you're losing half of the value on that one, but wouldn't you rather know where you are in terms of all
the
injuries?
You've eliminated so much variance from the first 18 weeks of the regular season.
Yeah, and I'm telling you, I was shocked when you sit there and you pay attention to how much the odds don't differentiate from the preseason to the start of the postseason. The Bengals were, a friend of mine took them at 18-1 to win the Super Bowl the year that they lost to the Rams. They were 18-1 in the regular season. I mean, there's no reason to bet it.
And in the case of the Chiefs, you're just paying a tax on Patrick Mahomes' health.
Oh, yes. That's exactly right.
That's all it is. You're going from 6-1 to 3-1, and that's to guarantee that Patrick Mahomes is healthy at the start of your bet.
You're basically paying 3-1 on his health. To your point, too, the NFL futures market, because of how few games there are, you always have an opportunity to circle teams that you like and then wait for them to lose a game.
Yep.
And there you go. You get a discount on their price. And it is a very, I would call it light discount, because if they win the following week, that number goes right back to it. Now, the best example, and I had a really, really, one of the better bets I've ever made in my life was last year, the week after the Chiefs lost to the Bills in the regular season, they dropped to 8-1. That was the week to pounce on the Chiefs. And I had that 8-1 ticket. I think it was like week six, somewhere in that range where the Bills played the Chiefs. It was still relatively early in the season, but they lost a high profile game in prime time against the team that they almost lost to in the AFC Championship game the prior year. And you saw that number drop to 8-1. That's how you bet the NFL futures market. If you like a good team, just circle them and wait till they lose a game. They're going to lose a game at some point.
Yeah, unless it's a division bet, I don't think the NFL's future market is like that of other sports.
Agreed.
And I think
it's definitely not like college football, where TCU last year is like,
I had 80-1.
Prime example.
I had 80-1 on November 1st. It's not like I bet it 80-1 November 1st and they made the Final Four. I made money off that ticket every week.
Yeah.
No, you're absolutely right. I think there's some opportunities there. Look, in college football, and I'm looking forward to getting into the win totals that you have, but to me, it's just there's too many variables with the NFL from an injury standpoint to tie up your money starting August to going into February. And it's not like the NBA where you know the favorites are generally the teams that are going to win it all, right? Denver, they win the title. They go 16-4 in the postseason. There are the usual suspects that you expect to be there in many of the other sports. In this one, not as much. I mean, we know so many of the teams that we expect, guys, but I just don't think right now when you look at the markets, it's really worth it on many of the teams. Now, I would say, okay, the 49ers, you could take a shot on to win the NFC and see where Purdy's, because I still think this team can win the NFC. And they don't even have to if you make a bet on them right now. I think they're about plus 250 or 3-1 or something.
4-1.
4-1. Okay, so you bet them. They end up in Philadelphia. You can bet the Eagles in that game because I think those two teams are so far ahead of everyone else. So depending on how you see it.
The NFC has a clear 1-2, in my opinion. I do not put Dallas on that tier. I put Dallas in the second tier with New Orleans and Detroit, and I think Minnesota too, the Giants maybe.
I only object to the fact that you've got two other teams in the tier with Dallas. I think tier one is San Francisco and Philadelphia. You can go whichever order you want to give Philly the edge because the quarterback position.
Yeah.
Tier two is Dallas by themselves for me.
Okay.
Tier three is Detroit and New Orleans for me. And I'm not going to discount Minnesota. I'll put the Vikings up there just based on what they did last year.
I think Minnesota, maybe it was the Netflix documentary. I love Kirk Cousins, man. He's such a nice guy.
How can you hate on this guy? Jared,
he's such a good dude.
I brought this up yesterday on the show. I started watching him on like episode 5 or 6. You know what comes across is Kevin O'Connell is a great communicator.
100%.
He comes across as a guy who's very stoic, very calm, confident in what he's doing, and knows how to relate to people in a very normal way.
If Brian Flores has even, and I feel the same way about Vic Fangio and the Dolphins, and we're going to get Ryan Reynolds' thoughts coming up in the next segment. Some of these teams that really underachieved in one key area last year, but were really good in the other area, Miami and Minnesota, to me, their defense was so bad. But they both made big changes, Fangio and Brian Flores, who can have immediate impacts. One of those teams, if one of those defenses catches on, they don't have to be top 10, top 20. Their offense is right there ready to roll.
Jared, I would agree with you. To me, Justin Jefferson is the best receiver in football. Miami, I think the challenge is the fact that you've got Aaron Rodgers in New York and, of course, Buffalo there as well. And the AFC is just so loaded. But in terms of the Minnesota Vikings in the NFC, I think it's wide open. And by the way, guys, the odds of the Vikings to win the division, I still don't understand. We talked about this yesterday,
makes
Jared.
No sense.
It makes no sense. This
Detroit
team
being odds on makes no sense.
I might bet Minnesota and Chicago to win that division.
I think there's a lot of value on that division because Detroit's criminally overvalued.
The Lions being picked to win the division is like next year in spring training, we see the Pirates to win the Central.
Criminal overvaluation on the Detroit Lions. We'll get Ryan Reynolds' thoughts next of the 33rd team. Stay with us on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Download the DraftKings app today. New customers can bet $5, get $150 in bonus money instantly. Use promo code VSIN when you sign up. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for full terms and conditions. This is Sharp Money. Jared Smith in for Patrick today. Amal Shaw here as well. And joining us now, 33rd team, Associate Director of Fantasy and Betting, also covers the awards markets at Establish the Run. It is Ryan Reynolds. You can follow him on Twitter at Ryan Reynolds NFL. And Ryan, we were just having a very spirited discussion about the NFL, and both Amal and I are, as most people are, the AFC light years ahead of the NFC in terms of the depth of that conference. One of the teams that I think makes up that very meaty middle of the AFC is this Miami Dolphins team. Ton of upside on the offensive side. We know they're a top five offense. But last year, the defense was an utter disaster. They were bottom five in most metrics. This year, they make a very interesting move to bring in Vic Fangio as defensive coordinator. I think, and of course, Jalen Ramsey as well is going to help the secondary. But Fangio, especially the culture and the scheme of the defense, I think is going to be vastly improved. You combine that with what Coach McDaniel's doing on the offensive side of the ball. If Tua stays upright, it seems like this Dolphins team has a good recipe for success this year.
Yeah, I agree with you all the way. Fangio is a top five defensive coordinator in the league. In particular, he's very good with halftime adjustments. One thing I'd add to what you said about the talent on their team, once they brought in Bradley Chubb via trade via the Broncos, they turned into like a fringe top 10 defensive line. Christian Wilkins has taken a step forward. Phillips looks like a player with pretty good potential. So I think in a best case scenario, Miami couples that really high ceiling offense with a top 10 type defensive front and a top 10 secondary. And if they can put all that together, they're pretty dangerous in the AFC.
I want to go to the Las Vegas Raiders. This is a team that you had listed you were looking at potentially, and also a great prop bet you have here on Devontae Adams. Just kind of break down how you see the Raiders a little bit, and which side of the Adams prop number are you coming out on?
Yeah, I mean, I love the city of Las Vegas. Raiders have the best uniform in the game, but I'm not really thrilled about what they're doing. They kind of have one foot in as like we're a contender, and one foot in was like we don't really have a very good roster, especially in the division they're in. You know, the Josh Jacobs situation doesn't help. I think Jimmy Garoppolo is a sideways move at best, probably a downgrade of quarterback from Derek Carr. So I like their under. I mean, we took it at 7.5 months ago, so I think if you're going to bet it now, you have to look at an alt line and be really aggressive if you're interested in that. And on that same front, Devontae Adams under 1,300 yards receiving. I think you can get that on DraftKings still. Can Jimmy Garoppolo support the kind of volume that Adams has seen previously in his career? My answer is no. You know, it's always scary, you know, betting on the under with a star player like Adams. But again, it's mostly a bet against the team in general. And Jimmy Garoppolo is really, I think he's only played one full season in his whole career. And if Brian Hoyer is in the lineup, you know, it's obviously not a positive for anyone on offense in Vegas.
So let's move to the Raiders' former quarterback, Derek Carr, who's now entrenched as the New Orleans Saints starter. And, Ryan, that division is very interesting. You have Atlanta that I think a lot of sharp people tend to like because of what their offense could potentially be, especially what they did in the draft. You have Carolina, who has the number one pick in the draft, and we don't really know what we're going to see from Bryce Young in year one. And then you have the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who obviously no Tom Brady this year, we think, we hope, but they make the move to Baker Mayfield, and that transition likely won't go smooth. So there's opportunity for a guy like Derek Carr to come into New Orleans and have success right away. They're the favorites in the NFC South. How do you view the Saints?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Saints have kind of a league-average offensive line. The defense has been slowly bleeding talent for a few seasons now. So if they were in, say, like the AFC North, I'd have no real interest in them. But they have the easiest schedule in the league, and that schedule means that I think they could end up with an inflated record, like talking 11-plus wins potentially. So the schedule is the most positive thing there, and I think Andy Dalton actually played better than most people think last year. He didn't put up big numbers, but they were in a lot of games, and I think, you know, especially like Vegas residents know this, Derek Carr at his best can give you a game against anyone. So I think that's an element the Saints have this year that they didn't last year.
Yeah, Ryan, I like the way you phrase that. You're absolutely right. At his best, he can beat anybody on any given Sunday. Chris Olave on this team had a great rookie year despite the inconsistency maybe with Andy Dalton, even though he was solid at times. You like his prop going over 1,025 here despite the return of Michael Thomas. No concerns there for you.
I mean, I definitely think there's a concern, but I've made a few plays on Chris Olave. I'm overweight on him in best ball. I'm a maniac that's done 400 best ball drafts at this point. So whenever I'm above market on a player like that, I normally veer unders when it comes to props because we have to account for injuries in football. But I think even if Olave misses two or three games, he can potentially reach that number. But to your point with Michael Thomas, if Michael Thomas is the Michael Thomas from 3 years ago, that's definitely a concern. But I still think there's enough for both players to eat, even in that scenario.
We're talking to Ryan Reynolds, Associate Director of Fantasy and Betting over at the 33rd Team. You can follow him on Twitter at Ryan Reynolds NFL. The awards markets, I think there is upside in these markets every year. It is hard to handicap voters sometimes. Instead of what we see, we have to put ourselves in the minds of what other people are seeing, which can be a very difficult task. But the MVP market is one that is usually dominated by quarterbacks. Do you think a quarterback, or if there is a specific player that you think has some value in the market this year, Ryan, who would that be?
Yeah, I agree with you all the way. It is, you know, it doesn't matter who we think is going to win. It's who voters are going to vote for. And I don't even bet on anyone that's not a quarterback. I don't really love anyone at a value currently. I think Joe Burrow's my guy, but I'm going to wait till in season to see if there's a dip after a loss or something to see if I can get in on that. Burrow's also closed real strong in the last two seasons, so I don't want to say we should count on that, but that's at least something we should be considering. I think Dak Prescott maybe has some upside, depending on what kind of number you can get him at. I bet on him early at 25-1. He's in the 16-ish-to-1 range now, just for the reason that in the NFC, you have the 49ers and the Eagles are the primary contenders. And then I think Dallas is pretty solidified as the most consistent team in third. So if the Cowboys can end up being the top seed in the NFC and he can be productive as he has been in the past,
I think there's a path for him at least here.
And Jared, I like that angle that Ryan has on Dak Prescott,
yeah,
because this team offensively with Gallup on the perimeter, of course, CeeDee Lamb, I think they'll be able to throw the ball. And now Pollard being the bell cow, he'll be able to get a ton of receiving yards out of the backfield. So something to pay attention to there as well. This is one I think is really, really hard to handicap. And you've got maybe a potential player or two on it. The coach of the year. Tell me a little bit more, not just about who you may have selected, but how you kind of hone in on who you might select.
The coach of the year market, how I treat it in two different intervals. Entering the season, I'm looking for someone who's a little bit undervalued that has a clear path to winning. And most of the time, we're looking for the coach who's going to exceed expectations the most. A couple years ago with Mike Vrabel, that didn't really happen. However, they overcame so many injuries, and he's been an excellent, excellent coach for years. So he won it then. But more times than not, it's a team that was below 500 the previous year that makes the playoffs the following year. So early in the process, I bet on Matt Eberflus and Arthur Smith at you know, 20-ish to 25-to-1 odds. They're both a little bit lower than that. I think Sean Payton has a good path. You know, there's a number of guys like Frank Reich could be in it if the Panthers end up winning the South. And then towards the end of the year, that's usually when that there can be great fluctuation in that award race in the last 4 weeks or so. So I'll be looking to make a play in that area, especially if I don't have one of the guys that I think is going to win.
Yeah, Ryan, I think that the Coach of the Year is the most unique award, I think, in all of sports, maybe. Andy Reid and Sirianni are, like, at the bottom of the list. They're the best coaches in the league, and they're at, like, the bottom of the odds board. That's like putting Patrick Mahomes at the bottom of the MVP odds board. It just doesn't make sense. But that award tends to be guys that have not had great seasons taking average to mediocre teams to above heights. Quarterback MVP, offensive player of the year, tends to be more the skill position guys. Justin Jefferson's the first name that comes to mind, Ryan, but is there another guy on that list that maybe has some upside for OPOY in the NFL this year?
Yeah, I treat it like the best skill position player, too. I mean, sometimes a quarterback wins. Like years ago when Matt Ryan won the MVP, Drew Brees was the offensive player of the year. But generally speaking, it's my favorite. Who I bet on is who I think is going to be the best skill position player. And there's two guys I bet on at this point. I bet on Jamar Chase at 14-to-1. Not real crazy about the odds. If he dips in season, I'm going to add on to it. I think he's at like 12-to-1 now. That's like the best line you can get currently. But Chris Olave, I bet on Chris Olave. Again, Saints schedule. I think they're in an interesting position. I got him at 75-to-1. I think he's still a little bit doable at the 55-to-1. You can get him now on DraftKings. But again, if I'm going to be overweight on a guy in best ball and I think he has top five upside at a specific position, I'm willing to take a long shot early in the process.
There you go. Ryan Reynolds, Associate Director of Fantasy and Betting over at the 33rd team. We appreciate the time, pal.
Great coming on, guys. Thank you.
Thank you.
Joe Burrow, Jamar Chase, Chris Olave, high upside guys heading into the year.
Yeah, I mean, Jamar Chase to me is a top three, top four receiver in the NFL. You know, when you get to that elite level, Devontae Adams, Justin Jefferson, Jamar Chase, Tyreek Hill, it's just your personal preference in terms of where you come down. I think the quarterback position is a little bit more aligned where you go Mahomes, Burrow, and then probably everybody else. But
yeah,
you can make so many arguments depending on team, how they fit as well.
Yeah, I think the awards market in the NFL is one of the few futures markets that I like to swim in a little bit more than others because of the big movement week to week. You can catch a flyer.
Yeah.
And that guy could just fly up the odds board, and then it gives you a ton of flexibility to come off and do other things. So we'll keep an eye, especially Joe Burrow. MVP Joe Burrow, I think that is who I would pick if I had to make one selection today, who will be hoisting that trophy at the end of the year. All right, we'll continue. Sharp Money after this on VSiN.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
The NFL betting guide is out now, and our college football guide coming in just a couple weeks. I have some write-ups in that guide, which we're going to tease in just a moment. Only VSiN Pro subscribers get all the tools to prep for college and NFL seasons. Our experts provide profiles on every team with advanced stats and power ratings, plus best bets on futures and season win totals. Sign up now before the end of July. Receive both guides for VSiN full with pro access all the way through the Super Bowl at an early bird discount of just $175. Or sign up for a monthly subscription. You get your first 30 days for only $19. See everything VSiN has for you to up your betting game. This offer ends July 31st, which is next week, so get on this. Don't miss out on all the preseason deals. VSiN.com/subscribe. Become a pro subscriber today. Jared Smith in for Patrick Maher today. This is Sharp Money. I'm Al Shaw, hanging out with us as well in his usual spot. We want to thank Ryan Reynolds of the 33rd team for coming on and sharing his insight on, listen, we are now at the precipice of the NFL season. There is an NFL preseason game a week from Thursday. It is crazy how much this season sneaks up on us every year, Amal. And I'll be honest, I've really started to shift my focus over the last, let's call it week or so, away from the daily grind of baseball into now a more forward-looking football mind. And I've never been happier to get baseball off of the front of my brain.
Well, look, I think baseball, I know for me it's been a tough season, but if you look at it, if you don't follow it on a day-to-day basis, and many people don't, it's just too tedious.
It's tough.
It is. So a lot of people are excited for football. I think the one thing that's helped captivate the NFL in the last two decades in the American sports landscape is the fact that a game is once a week.
Yeah.
It makes it a lot easier. You know, a lot of people are busy with other things, and so you're not having to give as much time. Think about this. Your baseball team could theoretically play 7 days, might have eight games in 7 days.
Yep.
Whereas in football, you've got one game in 7 days in reality.
To me, football is the best betting sport because of the immediacy of A, each play happens very fast. It is a fast-moving sport. Baseball, I know, is moving a little bit faster now. Basketball is obviously a fast-moving sport, so is hockey. But the sense of urgency in those sports in the regular season is not what it is in the NFL. So you get the immediacy of a fast-moving sport, but you also get the one-of-17 nature. This game is literally more than 5% of our season in one 60-minute interval, and I think that makes the sport the best on a week-to-week basis, both college and NFL.
Well, I hear what you're saying, but I actually think that's where certain spots in baseball and the NBA are easier.
Sure.
If you have a team on a 5-game losing streak in the NBA, that's pretty good. Excuse me. And they're playing a team that's solid, but they're on a 3-game winning streak. They're on a back-to-back. You could get a team that's going to be really focused in. You know, perfect example tonight, a play that I like, and I'll be honest with you, if you're not fading me, you're not that smart. But the reality is Arizona, they're on a 6-game losing streak now. Merrill Kelly going on the bump against Steven Matz. Arizona blows the game last night. They have a 6-5 lead going in the ninth inning. They give up a 5 spot to the Cardinals in the top of the ninth. Now at home, minus 117. Great opportunity for them against a guy in Steven Matz, who, to me, I was not a big fan of his when he was with the Mets. Cardinals acquired him. Never been a big fan. He's a guy now who's gone into kind of spot starts and more middle relief when needed.
I'm on the Yerfie in this game. It is one of my seven. I have a prop. I have 6 first inning bets today. This is one of them. Most of them are Yerfies because, I'll be honest, them all, I'm convinced that the balls are juiced.
Well,
MLB swapped out the balls during the break.
For people that are unfamiliar with what Jared was referring to, that's a yes-no bet in the first inning, whether a run will be scored or won't be scored. I don't ever play those. To me,
they are a roller coaster ride.
Well, it's not even that. It's just that my thing is,
I wish I didn't, but I'm obsessed with them for some reason.
Look, if you've got a run to be scored, it's fantastic. And if you one pitch, you could have a home run, but at the same time, you know, you get a runner stranded on third. I just like
the longevity
of a game to kind of play out, but you know, everybody's got their preferences.
I agree. I think it is an acquired taste, and Dustin has named me the father of the first inning. I don't know if that's a positive or a negative reference, but I'm going to take it as positive, Dustin.
It's one of those, I don't jump in unless I see something.
It's my favorite nickname that I've ever been given in my life.
Daddy of openers.
I love it. Father.
But
the father. Faja.
It's a wild thing
to
bet.
Daddy of openers. What was it? Instant datification?
Instant datification.
That's good. That's good.
It's a difficult thing to quantify, but when I have an elite pitching matchup, like tonight we have one. We actually have two that would intrigue me in that realm.
Yeah.
Seattle and Minnesota, I think, is interesting.
Kirby Lopez.
Kirby and Lopez. I mean, Lopez, little hit or miss at times, but I do think he has elite stuff. I like to back guys that I think can get me out of it. Now, Kirby's dangerous because he allows contact. He's not a strikeout guy, but he's a very good pitcher, and there's not a lot of runs scored against him.
Yeah, I'm excited to have Adam Burke on, of course, our lead MLB analyst, going to chat in our next segment about all things baseball. And I'll be honest, I'm going to ask him straight up if he thinks the balls are juiced, and I think I already know the answer. I think the answer is
yes. Oh, you
don't
have to convince them all of a conspiracy.
I don't think it's a conspiracy. There is evidence that last year, and I sent you guys the link this morning, Major League Baseball used 3 different balls last year.
And by the way, the ones that flew out of the yard were all used at Yankee Stadium last year.
What a surprise. What a surprise.
And now they're all being used in Los Angeles for the Angels.
To boost revenue amongst Aaron Judge's home run chase.
I can tell you one thing. If baseball wants to increase fan interest, The first thing you do is you take markets like Iowa and Las Vegas, and you stop with the stupid blackout. I mean, the fact that in Las Vegas, the home team is considered—
Four different teams.
No, six.
Six?
The Oakland—
it's the Angels?
Yeah.
The Dodgers?
Yeah.
It's—
the Diamondbacks, the Padres.
What about the Mariners and the Rockies? Are they in there too?
No.
No.
Oakland and San Francisco.
That area.
I don't know, not to get in the weeds of cable here, but like, Sometimes I get Diamondback games, and sometimes
well, the Diamondbacks just got absorbed by Major League Baseball because of the rights with Bally Sports. Diamond Sports Group's having some financial issues right now, and that's the company that owns Bally Sports.
I'm going to tell you, that's going to be a big problem in free agency because a lot of these teams make a lot of revenue. Absolutely. Yeah. From that, you got the Padres, all these teams. And I think we talked about it one day. I don't think it was Wyatt and I were talking about it. About half the teams in Major League Baseball are covered by Bally's. So the blackout, Iowa's got the same thing. You got the Twins, you got the Cardinals, the Royals, the Cubs, the White Sox.
It's terrible.
And I think might be the Rockies. I don't remember the sixth team, but it's just terrible that in these markets, you can't watch some of the teams. Think about this. Patrick has talked about this in the past. In Los Angeles, if you don't have,
Sportsnet LA, Comcast. Right? Yeah. So I have DirecTV and I get all those channels. So I actually watch all those games on local cable because technically we are a local sports market in LA and in San Diego. I get the San Diego and LA local channels on my DirecTV.
I'm sitting at home just trying to monitor my bets on the MLB TV app, which, by the way, the app as itself.
Fantastic. I used to work there. See, I had the pen. MLB.com.
It's a phenomenal app. Everything about it, especially when you watch it on a computer, you can do the four games at once.
It's great. It's the first app that really did this where you can watch all the teams. This was back like 15 years ago.
You can log in from like 100 devices, which is like means you can just share the password with everyone you know.
It's basically Netflix.
Yeah, it is basically Netflix.
Netflix is not like that anymore.
Well, didn't they cap Netflix now? Yeah. They capped it, but it's still a little fugazi.
They keep warning that that's going to happen. They've yet to do anything. You know how I know that? I'm on my parents' account.
I'm on my parents'. Netflix too. The only two things that I still use my mom for, Netflix, and also she pays for my cell phone still. We are on a family plan.
I knew the cell phone was going to be
cell
the answer.
Phone. Well, no, I've never paid a cell phone bill for the rest of my life until she drops. That's it. She's paying the cell phone.
How about this? My grandmother died in 2013. We just got her name off of the cell phone bill like a year ago. We were paying a bill coming to a dead person for literally 10 years.
That's like that's something out of like a tax evasion scheme wrong right there.
It's harder to change it than it is to just keep doing
it's
it.
So accurate.
It
really is. But, you know, but baseball to me, I don't know where you guys come out on the speeding up the game. I loved it this year.
Oh, loved it. It's a classic of everyone's afraid of change and then it happens like, oh, change is great.
I think we all agree the one issue is like we got to do something about the throwing over because the steal numbers. Look, baseball is a numbers game.
Maybe add one more
when you compare
disengagement.
Yeah, I don't know something, but we have to when we compare errors, we can't have a year where every team has players stealing 70 bases.
Ronald Acuna Jr., man. What did you get that number on, or do you almost get that number
I
on?
I gave it to Amal in the morning. I said, hey, minus 120. I said, Amal, there's no way he's losing this. It's minus 140. He's going to be the first ever 40-60 guy in the history of baseball. Luckily, him and his buddy got down. By the time I went to bed it that night, it went from 140 to 220. The next day, it was 320. I went, I'm out of this.
Here's the good news. If Acuna doesn't win it, I don't have to give him credit.
Thank goodness. Do you remember a year in baseball where both MVP races were wrapped up before the deadline?
You got to go back a while, but not in the last few years.
It seems very bizarre.
It is.
There's not even a question. Even if both guys got hurt tomorrow, I still think they would both win the MVP.
But even more insane, the one in the AL is the bigger favorite, a heavy favorite, and his team might not even make the postseason.
I do not think the Angels are going to make the postseason if I had to pick that today. I would say no to that. But I want someone to pass the Rays because I have a 15-1 ticket on them to miss the playoffs that I made about 2 weeks ago. And here's the thing. The Angels were the only team that I was like, okay, that could be the team. But now I'm starting to lose faith.
Well, I don't think the Angels are going to make it either. Artie Moreno seems to be the only person who thinks they're going to be able to get in.
I hope they keep Ohtani, though.
Well, I just don't understand why you would. You've got to make the move. You've got to get the organization better. Look, the greatest thing about sports is there's only one result. You win. If you don't win the World Series, your season is a failure.
We'll get Adam Burke's thoughts. He's not a failure. Coming up next here on VSiN Sharp Money. Stay with us.